Right, for those of you who weren't here last week, Happy New Year. It is a new year. Another one rolls by. They go quick, don't they? So they do at my age. I don't know about you lot, but they fly by. I suppose we're wondering what 2017 holds, what is coming up. I wonder what we'd start the year off with, and I thought we'd start with thinking about who we are and what we are. And I think that's a good place to be, isn't it? Not just what we do, but who are we as God's people, and what does he say about us and who we are? And maybe we need to hear that, because there may be all sorts of things going on in your head at the moment saying who you are, and most of them probably aren't true. Most of them probably aren't true. And you need to hear God's voice again. And particularly we're going to look at this bit, that middle one, that idea about being disciples of Jesus. And we're going to be focusing on what that looks like and what that means over the next few weeks. There's going to be some life group notes if you want to follow through and maybe listen to the message online and then follow through in your life groups. You can do that. I haven't written them yet. They'll be on by the end of the day. I'll have a chat with Andy and I'll get those notes on the website by the end of the day so you can follow through on Wednesday or Tuesday if you need to. Okay, so, bit of word association to start you off. Bit of word association, here you go. What do you think, let me just get this moving. What do you think when you see this word? You might have to click it on as this turns on, there you go, great. What do you think when you hear this word? If we divided you up, we might get all sorts of different reactions, I suspect, because if you say the word Christian, lots of people have lots of different opinions about that word, don't they? If somebody, for instance, came up to you in the street and said, "Are you a Christian?" I have fair confidence that you will respond differently to that question. Some of you will just say, "Yes, yeah, I'm a Christian, yeah." Some of you will say, "What do you mean?" Because that word has been used and abused in all sorts of ways, hasn't it? What do you mean when you say, "Am I a Christian?" Some of you may even say this. You may say, "Yes, but," because you know what might be going through the mind of the person in front of you. Be honest, there are some very negative connotations about Christian and what a Christian is. Some people hate Christians. They do, with a passion. And that's because probably their definition of this word is maybe something like this. There you go. Judgmental, homophobic moralists who think they're the only ones going to heaven and secretly relish the idea that everybody else is going to hell. Some people, that's a lovely definition, isn't it? I know some Christians like that. No, sorry. But I mean, there are people out there who think that is a Christian. Isn't that why you say, "Yes, I'm a Christian, but I'm not like that. And I don't want to be like that." But you may think that's what a Christian is. That may be your experience. That's why we qualify our answer to that phrase Christian. To confuse matters even more, people give different answers on how they became Christians. There are all sorts of reasons. This appears not to be working at all, Matt. I don't know why. Maybe there's no battery in it. Yeah, there's no batteries in it. That's why it's not working. There you go. Excellent. I'll give that back to you and see what you want to do with that. There you go. Excellent. So keep clicking on, Matt, all right? I'm relying on you at the moment. How you became a Christian? To confuse matters. Some people say it was an event, a moment in their life. Some people say it was a prayer that made them a Christian. Some people say it was their baptism that made them a Christian. Some people say it was their confirmation. That's a different thing than baptism. And there's, you know, it gets a bit confusing when Christians talk about it. It gets a bit confusing. What makes you one? And if you ask different churches in different towns and in different places, they may come up with slightly different answers. So that's the truth. That is the truth. Some people give different reasons why they are no longer a Christian. Click on one if you can, Matt. That'd be great. Some people may say this: "I was a Christian. I was a Christian once upon a time." And they may relate that to, I don't know, family you grew up in, they were Christians, so you were a Christian, or you went to church with family, or you went to church at one point, and therefore you define yourself as a Christian. Upbringing, something like that may have made you attach that word Christian, And then you may have moved off and thought, you know what, I don't like this, I'm not sure about this, I'm not sure what all this means. So you've cleared off. And you may say, I was a Christian. And that would be simple, wouldn't it? Except some Christians say there's no such thing as was a Christian. Oh, it's gone on. Let's go back a bit. Go back one. There you go. That's it. Some people say there's no such thing as was a Christian. Because once a Christian, always a Christian. Yeah, so you can't be a was Christian. You have to be, you're either a Christian or you're not. And when you're in, and when you're either in or you're out, full stop. You can't sort of stop being one. Others would say, no. Oh, well done. Thank you very much. Others would say, no, that's not true either, because there are some sins, aren't they, that make you a was Christian, as opposed to still being a Christian. Anybody confused yet? I mean, Christian, that definition of Christian is very muddy and very confusing. Denominations confuse people as well. Denominations are great, aren't they? I mean, I quite like the variety of denominations, but it can get a bit confusing. Some denominations openly say that our brand of Christianity is the one. It's the most accurate. It's the most, you know, close to what Christianity should be. And there's a little bit of tension sometimes between denominations about what Christian really is. It used to be Catholic and Protestant, didn't it? You know, the Catholic and Protestant Church, they used to burn each other, depending on who was on the throne at the time. You know, we're on the throne, so we'll burn you lot. Oh, no, we're on the throne. We'll burn. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's why some of these definitions for Christian are not very pleasant. You know, judgmental and vicious at times. There's all sorts of things being done in the history of the world in the name of Christian. I don't think I have anything to do with God at all. But different brands of Christianity are around. And even within our little brand of Christianity, which I would call evangelical, that's the technical term, evangelical. As evangelical Christians, there are differences of opinions. And there are different tribes in the evangelical denomination. You know, we're all different. Some think, you know, some are slightly more free and easy. Some are very nailed down. You know, if you join that church, you have to sign up to a list of things that you agree on that are about 50 pages long. And you have to agree on all of them before you are, you know, kosher. That's a Jewish word. But you know what I mean? Before you're a Christian and you're okay being part. And other churches have a very light sort of. We're one of the ones who have a more lighter list about primary and secondary stuff. So that's really confusing too. I don't know about you. For other people, Christian is about this. It's about what you believe. But then other people say, no. No, it's not about what you believe. It's about how you behave. And they say that's what determines a Christian. Isn't it interesting? This term we use, this word, Christian, the term we associate with, the term we use all the time, is a term that is very badly defined. And there's a lot of controversy over what it means inside the church and outside the church. It's a confusing term. Here's something more interesting. Here's something really interesting. You may know, you may not. Here's what you need to know. The word Christian appears 3 times in the whole of the Bible. It's only there 3 times. That's interesting, isn't it? And what you might not know is when it does appear, it's never defined. The word Christian is never defined. In fact, the term Christian was a derogatory term used by people outside of this new Jesus movement, what we eventually called the church. Outside of that group, this was a bunch of people who didn't believe in Jesus who made this phrase up and who created it and who attached it as a label to the followers of Jesus. The people in this Jesus movement never used it. That's weird, isn't it? Because we're a Christian church. But the people in the New Testament in the church never used the term Christian to define them. It was used by people outside to define who they were. It was like one of those terms that we use today. You know, there are terms that we use today to define groups in society or people who have similar traits and behaviours or dress code or music preference. Can you think of any groups in our society that they are, and you put a name on them? Anybody? Yep. Punk. Where that was, that's more 70s, but there are probably still a few punks around. Yeah, a few punks around, yeah. Goths, yeah. Could we give a label? Because they're all dressed in black. They listen to The Cure all the time. They're miserable most of the time. You know, if you're a goth, you have to be depressed 95% of the time. Emo is the new one. You know the word emo? I'm not sure what it means. What does emo stand for? Emotionally melancholic something. Or I don't know. It's a bit goth-like. It's a bit like that. Any others?
Teddy boys.
Teddy boys. They're showing your age, Rog. Teddy boys. Yeah, there were the what were they? Teddy, the rockers and the modern rockers. Yeah, and we label people, don't we? So people, and a lot of these terms actually generate. I mean, I am a proud geek. I'm a geek. I didn't make that name up, but I am. But it's a term made by people who aren't geeks. As a derogatory phrase to people like me who love Star Trek and Star Wars and reading comics. You know, I mean, that's who I am. But it's a term made by a bunch of people outside who want to put that label on me. So I'm a sort of proud geek or nerd or whatever you want to call it. That's who I am. So these are terms that we still do it today. The group outside looks at them and says, oh, yeah, they all do that. They are, and we put a label on them. That's what happened 2,000 years ago. That's where the word Christian came from. Now you're not sure you want to be one, are you? Hang on a minute. Derogatory term by a bunch of people who weren't even one of them who made this thing up. But it's true. Book of Acts describes a period of intense persecution in the New Testament, just after Jesus had died and risen and ascended, and the church was starting to build this group of Jesus followers, these Christians, as the other people called them, were starting to grow up. And the Jesus movement in Jerusalem started to happen, but there was this persecution. A lot of Christians, you read it in the book of Acts, a lot of Christians, Jesus followers, whatever you want to call them, in that persecution, fled the city of Jerusalem, and they headed off. Many of them headed off to Antioch, which is a city in Turkey, modern-day Turkey. So they all fled over there, these Jesus followers. And when they arrived, they started talking about Jesus. They started telling people about this Messiah who had come, who had died, who had risen again. They particularly talked about his resurrection, which is something we don't talk enough about. And they tell people, and people believe them. They said, wow, is that real? Is this Jesus guy real? And loads of people became followers of this Jesus too. And they started a church. They built a church up. Now, the church in Jerusalem, which was still surviving but under intense persecution, that had the original disciples in it, you know, James and John and Matthew and people like that. And they said, well, let's find out what's going on in Antioch because something's happening. Well, these people have headed off because of the persecution, have planted a church. So let's find out how they're getting on. So they send a guy. Do you know who they sent? They sent one little guy. A guy who was very sort of background in the New Testament, but an incredible bloke. I think one house group are doing a study on him soon. Barnabas, yeah. You're doing that. Your group's looking at Barnabas, aren't you? So Barnabas heads off to Antioch, and he has a look at this new church. And he finds so many people there who are now followers of Jesus, that in fact they called themselves something. Do you know what they actually called themselves? Followers of the way. That they never used that word. They called themselves followers of the way, probably because Jesus said, I am the way. Yeah. So it's a reference to Jesus. So followers of the way, followers of Jesus. So they find loads of followers of the way in Antioch, not Christians, followers of the way. And Barnabas says, wow, there's loads of them. We're going to need to call in reinforcements. So he heads off and he finds a guy called Paul. Paul has just become a Christian. Paul has been living a sort of loosely connected with the church in Jerusalem, but there's a little bit of a trust issue, because you may know that Paul originally started killing Christians, or what he would call them, Christians, and he started killing them because he thought they were maverick Jews who were bringing heresy to the Jewish faith. So he started killing them. Then he met Jesus himself and became a follower of the way, a follower of Jesus. And this is what we discover. Now Barnabas is called in reinforcements. This is what happens. Barnabas went out onto Tarsus to look for Saul. So Saul's become a Christian. When he found him, he brought him back to Antioch, this new church. Both of them stayed there with the church for a full year, teaching large crowds of people. Listen to this, brackets. It was at Antioch that the believers were first called Christians. Not by Barnabas or Paul, but by the local population. Christians never called themselves Christians. Weird, but true. It's all there. It's in the Bible. And here's what happens. Oh, yeah, no. What else you get is that actually there are other people who evidence that it wasn't Christians who called themselves Christians. There's some extra-biblical stuff. There's a guy called Cornelius Tacitus. Cornelius Tacitus was a Roman, was not a believer or a follower of Jesus. He was a Roman historian who outlived about seven Caesars. That's not hard to do, because Caesars tend to get stabbed, killed, poisoned, bumped off on a fairly regular basis. So he outlived, and he wrote about seven or eight Caesars, because he was a Roman historian. But he also wrote about one particular Caesar, whose name was Nero. Nero being famous for what? There's a little phrase about Nero. He did what while what happened? Fiddled while Rome burned. So he wrote about Nero, and Tacitus wrote that he wrote about this event where it was fairly common, it became fairly common knowledge and accepted that Nero lit the fire. He basically wanted to renew Rome. He wanted to rebuild it. And he thought, I'm not going to ask for permission. I'm not going to the local council and asking, because that takes forever, doesn't it? Let's face it. So he wasn't going to do that. So he just set fire to it, which was really a bad idea, particularly for those people whose homes went up and businesses. But he set fire to a huge... And this is what he did. This is what Tacitus says he did. This is outside the Bible. This is by a person who isn't a Christian. Consequently, to get rid of the report, because everybody knew it was Nero, but Nero thought, well, I'll find a scapegoat. So to get rid of the report, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations. Called Christians by who? By the populace. That was Tacitus. The populace, the population of Rome, had labelled this bunch of people who followed the way, followed Jesus, and they called them Christians. And it wasn't a pleasant term. It was a term, a fairly derogatory term. And here's what he says. Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of one of our procurators, Pontius Pilate. So that's a Roman historian that everybody recognizes today, and we get lots of information about the Roman Empire through him, but he wrote about that, and he acknowledges that there was this guy. Interestingly, it shows you what dear old Tacitus understands about Christians and Christianity, because he assumes Jesus' surname is Christus. Like, my surname is Hughes. He assumes Jesus' surname is Philip Hughes, Jesus Christ. Is that right? That's not right. Christus wasn't a surname, it was a title. Do you know what it means? What does Christus mean? It's the Greek form of the Jewish. Christus is the Greek word that means the same as Messiah. And Messiah, or Christus, means anointed. It means anointed. Jesus, the anointed one, the one who is from God. And that's what Christus means. It's a title, it's not a surname. But Tacitus didn't know that, in the same way that the Christians around didn't know who Christians were, really. They just bunged a label on them, and that label was Christian. So the Christian term started all like that, really. It's interesting how little people outside of the faith knew, and that they used all these phrases and terms and didn't really know what they were doing. The big point is this. These were outsiders, came up with a name to describe the new movement. They came up with the name Christian. So next time somebody asks you, are you a Christian? Now you're going to get confused, aren't you? You're going to, yeah, I'm not sure. It depends what you mean. Well, you know, Christians didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves, let me tell you, they called themselves something far more specific and something, in my opinion, far more uncomfortable and far more disturbing than this phrase that everybody around them called them, Christian. They used a very different term. One of the reasons you can't get five people in a room to agree on the definition of Christian is because Christian is not defined in the New Testament. It does not come from Jesus. It's not defined. Jesus didn't use it to describe the people who followed him. You can't go to a verse in the Bible that says, a Christian is. It isn't there. You can't find a verse in the Bible that says a Christian should A, B, C, D, E, or a Christian shouldn't A, B, C, D, E, because it's not there. It's only used three times, and it's usually used to describe a word that people outside the faith applied to us. But there is a term in the New Testament that is regularly and consistently used to describe people who belong to Jesus and to his movement. There is a term that is always used to describe it, and it is this word. Time and time and time and time and time again. In fact, when Jesus called people to follow him, he called them to be his. He did. He never said, be a Christian. He said, be my disciple. Follow me. And this is a term that describes us, because it disturbs me, to be honest, because this term is very clearly defined in Scripture. You want to know what a disciple looks like, does, is, behaves like? That is really clear. Christian, you can make it up. And that's the problem. Everybody does. But this one, the Bible's very clear on what one is and what one isn't. I mean, you can hide behind the name Christian all day, and I think some people do. They hide behind the term Christian. You can go to war in the name of Christianity and you can justify it because you can define it any way you want because the Bible doesn't define it. So you can. And people have gone to war in the name of Christian, because they're just redefining it how they want. You can do anything you want in the name of Christianity because it is undefined. But when you come to the term disciple, you can't get away with that, because it's very clear what one is and what one isn't. Here's what the Bible says. The disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. But what were they? They were disciples. First. What is a disciple? What is a disciple? Well, here's some words for you. Disciple is a learner, a pupil, a follower. I love the word apprentice because that really sums it up. I was an apprentice once for about 2 or 3 years. I was an apprentice. I don't know what that looks like and what it feels like to be an apprentice. You're learning from someone who's already there. They've already got it, they've worked it out, and you're learning from them, and you're learning to be like them and do what they do. That's an apprentice. That's a disciple. They've got the same principle. Adherent, use whatever word you want, but that's what one is. Disciple is someone who follows the teaching and life of another person. Not just their teaching, but their life. A disciple of Christ is always asking, what does Jesus think? What would Jesus do? You know, WWJD. What would Jesus do? What would Jesus say in any given situation? A disciple is someone who follows Jesus and says, what would Jesus do, think, say, act, behave like? What would Jesus want right now? A disciple is has chosen a leader to follow and chosen to let their life be directed by that leader. That is what a disciple is. And the answer to that leader that they make up front is this: whatever you say, wherever you tell me to go, whatever you tell me to do, the answer, before I know the question, the answer is yes. Now that's disturbing. But that's what a disciple is. Someone who up front decides, you're my Lord, my leader, the leader of my life. I'm going to learn from you. I'm going to be like you. And whatever the question is, the answer is yes. That's disturbing. Should we go back to being Christians? Should we do that? Because that's not quite as disturbing, and we can make that one up ourselves because it's not defined. But when you get to this, that's disturbing. It's uncomfortable, but it's hard to dodge this term in the New Testament. So, for instance, just to give you a few more verses. So the word of God spread, the number of disciples, doesn't use the word Christians, the number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith. By the way, if you've got the New Living Translation, it will use the word believers quite often instead of disciple. I think the NIV is better on this because it actually is the word disciple. It is that word. It is that word. So believers could make you think being a Christian, a follower of Christ, is about believing stuff. It's about more than that. It's about being a disciple. But they use that term because it's easier to define and easier to understand at first glance. But disciple is the real word used in the scripture. So disciple. Here's another one. When he came to Jerusalem, this is Paul, by the way. When he came to Jerusalem, he tried, because he'd been persecuting the church, he tried to join the disciples. But they were all afraid of him, not believing he really was a... Yeah, you notice they're not using the word Christian. A disciple. That's what you are. If you follow Jesus, you're a disciple. That's what you are. So it's great fun. And in fact, here's the good news. It wasn't just blokes who could be disciples. You could be a disciplette. There are such things as female disciples. It wasn't gender specific. You can be a disciplette, because in Joppa there was a disciple named Tabitha. She was always doing good and helping the poor. So it wasn't, you know, anybody could be a disciple. They could follow Jesus. They could be an apprentice of Jesus, a follower of Jesus Christ. The big point, people who followed Jesus called themselves disciples. Which leads us to a rather disturbing question. Are we disciples? Or are we just this undefinable term, Christian? 2017, what are you going to define yourself by? Are you going to be a disciple this year? Or are you going to be a safer option? You're just Christian, whatever that means. And it means all sorts of things to all sorts of people. Make it up as you go along. Because it's not defined in the New Testament. What are you going to be this year? Are you a follower of Jesus? Someone who says yes to the one they follow? It doesn't matter what the question is. Yes. I'm following you. That means the answer's yes. What's the question? What's the question, Jesus? Are you an apprentice of Jesus, someone who actively learning to be like him and do what he does? Are you a disciple? Are you going to be that this year? That's plain disturbing, isn't it? That's uncomfortable. It is to me. It is to me, because I don't always get that right. I struggle with that. I struggle with saying yes to Jesus sometimes when I downright don't want to do it. And I say, no, I'm not doing that. Forget it. And I do. Am I just a Christian? Or am I a disciple of Jesus Christ? So I want to help you by taking you to a moment as we close where Jesus speaks directly to the people who want to be his disciples, who choose to be his disciples, who make that decision. And he gives them the bottom line. He defines what it means. If you say, I want to be a disciple, He says, okay, 2017, you want to be a disciple? Here's what it looks like. And he told his people, his followers, what it looked like one day. And if we, as his people, got this one thing about being a disciple right, it would change the world. It would certainly change your world, and it would change the world of the people around you. It would change everything. If we just did one thing right about being a disciple, this would revolutionize the world. In fact, I would say, if we get this one thing that Jesus says is the bottom line about being a disciple right, if we got this right, I suggest that history would have been different in the world. There would have been no First World War. There wouldn't have been any war. There wouldn't have been a Second World War. There wouldn't have been a civil war in the UK back then. There wouldn't have been slavery. There wouldn't have been any of this stuff. If we just got one thing right about being a disciple, of which there are many things, but this one bottom line thing that Jesus nails down. Jesus is having his last meal with people who say they want to be his disciple. They want to follow him. And he's having a last meal with them. It's Maundy Thursday. Judas has already left the room and he's gone to betray Jesus. He's already resigned as a disciple. He's quit. And time is short, and Jesus knows that he's not got long to tell them what really matters. When you know it's your last meal with someone, you tell them the things they really need to know. It really clarifies what you want to talk about. It's not the weather. It's something else. And this is what he says to them. Not that. Not that. They. Dear children, I will be with you only a little longer. And as I told the Jewish leaders, you'll search for me, but you can't come where I'm going. So, he says this. Now I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love each other. And the disciples around the table are thinking, that Jesus, I hate to tell you this, that's not very new. The last 3 years you've been saying that. You've been talking about love for the last 3 years. This is not new, Jesus. Can you please give us something new? So Jesus says, he says, let me just qualify this a little bit when I say love each other. This is what I mean when I say love each other. Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Saying this to people who want to be his disciples, who want to follow him. His apprentices. And I suspect the conversation went something like this. Matthew, you remember the day we met? Matthew, you were in a tax collector's booth. You were sat there and everybody hated you, Matthew. Everybody hated you. You were a collaborator. You worked for the Romans, the occupying power. You were a traitor to your own people. You had sold out. Everybody hated you. Now, Simon, where's Simon around the table? There you are. Simon, you were a Jewish freedom fighter, right? You were the Romans would call a terrorist. You would kill for the Jewish people. Do you remember where we went that night when we met Matthew? We went to his house. Yeah, that's right. We went to his house. And who else was there? Simon, the zealot. Who else was there? Tax collectors, collaborators, traitors. They were all there. Remember how I loved Matthew, says Jesus. Remember how I loved this guy, this traitor, this collaborator to his own, against his own people. Do you remember how I loved him? That's how I want you to love each other. Just like that. Nathaniel. He finds Nathaniel around the table. Nathaniel's there. Nathaniel, remember how we met? Remember how we met? Your brother Philip, he found me first, and he came and found me. He got all excited, so he came and dug you out. You were under a tree at the time, I think. And he went and found you. And do you remember what you said when he said, we found the Messiah, Nathaniel. We found him. Come and follow me. I'll show you him. You remember what you said? I wasn't there, but I know what you said. Because I'm God, and I sort of spot things. You said, could anything good come from Nazareth? Bit prejudiced, bit bigoted, bit judgmental, bit aloof. You trashed my family, Nathaniel. where I came from and the people I came from. You trashed them. But remember how I treated you, Nathaniel. I said to you, come and follow me. That's how I treated you. James and John were around the table, Last Supper. Remember how your mum asked me for the best jobs in the coming kingdom? Remember how I treated you? I should have laughed, but I didn't. Remember how I treated you, James and John, when mum tried to get you the plum job? Peter, when you were sinking like a stone, you were telling me what I should do, as if you knew better than me. You remember all those times, Peter? You remember how I treated you in the midst of all that? And then he says this. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. In other words, Jesus says, you want to follow me. You want to be Jesus' followers. You want to make me your leader of your life. You want to call yourself followers of the way. You want to do that? Here's the one thing that defines it. Unlike the word Christian, where everybody makes it up as they go along, here's the one thing that defines whether you are a follower of Jesus Christ or not. Here's how everybody will know. Now, I know lots of people who call themselves Christians. But I know less people who love others like Jesus did. I know less people in that category. It's almost as if Jesus is saying here, the mark of being a disciple is not how much you know about me. It's not how much you go to church. It's not about any of that external stuff that Rod was mentioning. It's not of that external. It's about something more than that. It's about how much you love. That's the definition of a disciple. Loving God and loving others. And what happens next is really funny, because if you read the Bible, I love this, because this just proves that the disciples were like me. What happens next is really funny, because Jesus has just made this massive point. And you know what Peter says at this moment in time, which makes you laugh. This is what Peter says. But Lord, where are you going? Oh, for goodness sake. I can see Jesus going, oh. Because he's just said the most important thing he could, and Peter's still on. Hang on, you're going away? What was that? Did he just say he was going away? And misses the whole of the thing. He's like, oh, you idiot. I love him. That's why I like Peter. He's just like me. He misses it. But Lord, where are you going? I think Jesus must have face-palmed right there. Peter hadn't heard a single word. And Peter's saying, have you not heard, Peter, have you not heard what I've just said? And Peter's going, oh, yeah, but I want to go with you. I do want to be your follower. I do want to be a disciple. I do want to follow you. So I'm coming with you. Wherever you're going, because you just mentioned you were going away and that's all I focused on, I'm going to follow you and I'm coming with you. Even if I have to die, Jesus, I am going to follow you. I am going to do that. And Jesus almost says to him this, Peter, I don't want you to come with me this time. I don't want that. I want you to stay here. I don't want you to die for me, Peter. I want you to stay and do something much, much, much harder. I want you to love these guys in the same way that I've loved you, and I want people to see it. I want you to do that. I don't want you to come with me, Peter. I want you to do this. And it is harder, but I want you to do it. That's what Jesus is saying to Peter. I want you to create a community that is defined and characterized by unconditional, generous, ridiculous love. I want you to create a group. Whenever they meet, that's what they look like. I want people to see that and to be drawn in by that and to become part of that. That's what I want you to create, Peter. I don't want you to come with me. I don't want you to die for me, Peter, right now. It will happen, but not right now. But right now, I want you to do this. And it's harder. I want even the skeptics, says Jesus, to know who say, I don't want to be a disciple of Jesus. I have no intention of being a disciple of Jesus. But I want them to see you and say, but you know what? I'd employ one. I'd love to have one in my team. I'd love to have, I those sort of people who I can trust, who are generous and gracious. I'd employ one. I'd hire them. I don't want to be one, but I'd like to work for one because I've seen what they're like and they are probably the best employers in the world. I would like to work for one, even though I don't want to be one. That's what Jesus is getting at. That's what he wants to mark us. That's what he wants to define us. Not the word Christian, but this word disciple. And a disciple is someone who loves as Jesus loves. And even when people say, I don't know if I'd ever want to be one, hopefully they'd say, I'd like to be a man one day who is like that. Or I'd like a man one day to treat my daughter like they treat theirs. I'm maybe not interested in being one, but I hope my son marries a woman who would honour her husband the way those women honour their husbands. Can you imagine what your home, your street, your community, your workplace would look like in 2017 if we just got this one thing right? Never mind the Ten Commandments and all the stuff Paul says. What if we just got this one thing right about who we are as disciples? What would it look like? What would it be like if we decided to be disciples who just did this one thing? What if we did it not even to everybody, but just to the people that we meet with regularly, whoever they may be? What would that look like? If we just started there, can you imagine what would happen? If you're a follower of Jesus, you should try this. You should try this. And I know your husband's a mess and your wife's a wreck and your teenagers are teenagers and your parents haven't said, haven't had an original thought since 1967. I know that. In fact, I know, as you know, that everybody around you is a complete idiot. Everybody around you is a complete idiot. You are the only one who is not an idiot. I know that. We all know that. But what would it look like this week if you love those people like Jesus has loved you? You may be surrounded by people like Peter who say, hey, where are we going? You may be surrounded by people like that who haven't got it. But Jesus didn't use that as an excuse, did he? Jesus didn't use that as an excuse. They're idiots around me. He loved them, and he calls us to do the same in the same way. So what if for the next week you say, I'm not taking my cue from anybody around me about how I treat them. I'm taking my cue from Jesus. And then do it for 2 weeks, and then three, and then four. But start with a week. Start with 7 days. Just try it. And I can promise this. I can't promise you will get a payoff. The reason I say that is because they crucified Jesus for doing this. So there's an encouragement for you. They crucified Jesus for doing this. So be prepared. But I am asking you to try it. Not because it is a means to an end. Not because it's a means to an end in your own life. I'm asking you to do this because this is what it means to follow Jesus. This is what it means to be a disciple. This is the bottom line that Jesus has drawn. I'm asking you to try this because it's better than just being a Christian. Whatever that means. I'm asking you to try this. This is disciple. This is how the world changed 2,000 years ago. This is how Rome was toppled without a sword being drawn. This is the most powerful thing in the world. And for those of you who have experienced Christian, and you don't ever want to be like that, if you're not a follower of Jesus today and you've experienced Christian and you don't like it, I just want to say, I understand. And I don't want you to be like that either. My hope for you is that you will encounter some disciples of Jesus Christ who are defined by Jesus' bottom line, that they love in ridiculous, gracious, and generous ways. And then their life will speak to you about the one whom they follow, Jesus Christ. And then that will speak far more than any of my sermons ever will, because it is far more powerful when a bunch of people just do that one thing that Jesus declares defines people who follow him. 2017, here's the question. Are you going to be a Christian? Whatever that means. Or are you going to be a disciple?